Triple M's Dead Set Legends podcast brought to you by Harvey Norman, the experts in soundbars, making it easier than ever before to find the right solution.
Oh, good morning, Melbourne Town. This is a three-hour show, 9 to 12 every Saturday
Dog's
morning.
Back.
The dog is back and he is about. The king has gone to Thailand. The dog is in the studio. We might need to go till 1:30 this afternoon to get all our guests on. So much to get through. Greg Rust with some big motorsport stories coming your way. We've got a couple of boys in from Melbourne United. Adam Peacock on his new book, and Brownie is trying to track down a couple of big name guests, one already secured. Good morning, Campbell.
G'day, mate. Great to be here. And Ducky's worked hard this year, thoroughly deserves his trip over to Thailand.
Who are you bringing to the table? Probably the most sought after sports person in the country today.
Yeah, look, I'm bringing Michelle Payne to the table. Obviously, great moment Tuesday. First female jockey to win the Melbourne Cup, and she's going to have a nice long chat to us, bringing some exclusive stuff to the table.
Well, you know her well, to the point you walked in the studio and you said, I've got Michelle. And I said, how'd you get hold of her? And you said, I am her mentor.
I'm not sure I said that. But no, look, me and Michelle get along very well.
So a lot to look forward to. Next, we're talking cricket, though. Plenty to come. I'm just getting a text from Ricky Ponting. Hi, mate. I'll be okay to chat in about an hour and a half. Does that work for you? Can we squeeze him in?
It's got to be an hour.
Ricky Ponting literally just on the phone. So we'll have a chat to him from New York. All happening, Mark Howe, Wayne Carey, Ricky Ponting to join us. Michelle Payne as well. Dead Set Legends. Good start, dog.
Crisp.
Triple M.
Coming past the 300 metres, XS Knowledge went to the lead narrowly. Here's Prince of Penzance coming on down the outside. Prince of Penzance for Michelle Payne. Now Max Dynamite starts to charge home. Prince of Penzance for Max Dynamite. Prince of Penzance, it's history and winning to Michelle Payne. Prince of Penzance beat Max Dynamite.
Triple M's Dead Set Legends for Harvey Norman, Mark Howard, Campbell Brown. That was the Melbourne Cup with Michelle Payne on board. And the music in the background, all fired up.
All fired up. Pat Benatar.
Was requested by the great woman herself. Michelle joins us on the line now. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning.
Michi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
What's the significance of that song?
The reason that song's so significant is every day leading up to the Melbourne Cup, when I'd go training down around my oval near my house, I'd put that song on. Was my first song to get me in the mood of training and motivate me to, you know, work really hard and push myself, because I kept telling myself, you're not going to win the Melbourne Cup unless you're fit and I'm the worst runner in the world. It's so embarrassingly bad, but it was the song that I dreamed of winning the Melbourne Cup with, and when I played it after it on the Wednesday, I absolutely burst into tears just to think that it was what I dreamed of and it actually happened.
Can you believe it? Just tell us about, you rocked up to the racetrack on Tuesday. You were confident. How your life's changed since that race?
It's just like you wouldn't believe. I rocked up and I was so calm and relaxed, and I was just thinking, this is so strange. It was like eerie, you know, and even in the barriers before the race, I was first unloaded and I was just standing on the side of Prince and just chatting to Frankie DeTorio in Barrier 2, and just so relaxed and didn't even have one nerve in the world, which is like absolutely crazy in the Melbourne Cup. And then, yeah, for it to happen is just like changed my life forever. Next week I've been asked to go up and have dinner with the Governor General and meet Prince Charles and Princess Camilla.
Like royalty.
Unbelievable. Can you believe that?
Nice.
Did you receive one bit of advice, Michelle, before the race? I'm sure you received a lot of it. Is there one bit of advice that stuck in your mind?
The only thing that one of the other jockeys said to me was, you know, it's crazy. If you're going to get into a position, get in there or get out of there. And I was like, yep, no, I know that. But probably the one other thing that I was told was from Darren Weir, who drilled it into me. He said, I'm going to drill it into your brain that when you straighten for home, count to 10, which I knew, but it's, you know, when somebody's really telling you like that, it's embedded in your brain. And obviously you don't have time to count to 10, but I just was like, just, you know, waited as long as it felt right. And then to have him sprint and win is just like unbelievable.
The reason I asked you that, because the dog came in here this morning, Michelle, and told me that he offered you some pretty good advice. And he said, ask her this question because I think she'll bring me up.
Just left him hanging to know.
No, it's all good. And what about after the race? You got a call from the Prime Minister. Now, is it true that you weren't sure who you were talking to, whether it was Tony Abbott or Julia Gillard with a husky voice
rate.
Or Malcolm Turnbull. There's been that much change in leadership. That was must have been pretty exciting.
I admit it, I was thinking, it's not Tony Abbott.
That's brilliant. What about yesterday? That must have been a pretty special moment, heading back to your hometown, Ballarat. They shut the streets down and yourself and the family was there. Stevie was there. The horse had come from Warrnambool. Must have been pretty emotional.
Oh, it was. I nearly was lost for words, even though I'm such a rambler. I was sort of, you know, stuttering and getting through the start of my speech out there, but it was incredible. To see Stevie and I up there in front of Ballarat, where we grew up, and my school friends from OLHC, yeah, primary school in Loretto, it was so good.
Michelle, was there a stage, how late in the race, when you're past the clock tower, when you've got 50 to go, 100 to go, 20 to go, where you actually, do you get a chance when you're on the horse? Brownie talks about a grand final, and he had a couple of minutes where he realised he was going to win the grand final. Did you have a moment where you're still on the horse where you actually think, I'm about to win the Melbourne Cup, I'm home here?
Yep, there was a couple actually. First was at the 600. When I was on the back of a trip to Paris and I was going past the 600 and I was still pulling, I was like, oh my God, I think I'm about to win the Melbourne Cup. And I just said to myself, keep your composure, don't panic, just wait. You're not going to win it if you lose it. So got to the top of the straight and got to the 300 and I've never yelled so loud in my life. And then when I went across the line, like, I knew the last 300 I was home. Like, I had that much horse under me and he spread out. There's no chance another horse will get over the top of me the way he's let down.
Michelle, you're giving me goosebumps, actually, listening to you. And so then you cross the line and the world goes absolutely crazy. But I guess you get, what, 30 seconds before you get approached by him on horseback with the microphone? You probably have 30 seconds to yourself at that point?
Yeah, I had my head down and I was just shaking it and I was like, oh my God, just won the Melbourne Cup. And I just was like, I can't explain it actually. I can't put it in words. And the first person I saw was Sam Holland, who Sam had seen it in Prince of Penzance when I'd seen it at Flemington when he won as a 3-year-old. He came up to me after that day and he goes, horses just don't do that. I was like, I know, can you believe that? Like when he won that day. And I said to him, I think he won the Melbourne Cup. And I think he was the only other person that really felt it with me. And when I saw him after the race, we both said it at exactly the same time. Can you believe that? I just won the Melbourne Cup. And he was just like, it was so good to share that with him as well.
Michelle, this is extraordinary. Can you hang around for a little bit more, Michelle? Because we need to hear a bit more of you, if that's okay.
Yeah, can I just say I'd really love it if your listeners and everybody out there could tune in to tomorrow night to the Australian story that they've done on our family and share that, you know, share our lives with us. I think it'd be pretty awesome.
So that's an Australian story. So that'll be on the ABC. You're saying
Channel 7. Oh, sorry, Sunday night story.
Sunday night story. No, so that'll be
Channel 7 anyway.
Yeah, Sunday night at 6:30 with Melissa Doyle. That will be,
that's
I reckon.
The one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Dead Set Legends for Harvey Norman, Mark Howard and Campbell Brown. Halfway through my favourite interview of the year, we've got Michelle Payne on the line. Michelle, what now? How do you top that? You've achieved the ultimate. From what I've read, you're going to move into training when that's a possibility that you can become a jockey and a trainer at the same time.
Yeah, look, I just don't know what to do with myself. it's just getting offers from everywhere, which has just been so unbelievably incredible. I think my whole life has just changed completely forever. Basically, I want to keep my life pretty basic and normal as much as possible because I've tried to do that my whole life. And I've had such a blessed life. Like, the things that I've been able to experience is just, I'm so lucky. And I just want to make the most of everything and be great ambassador for sport and for women in general. I think that's just the main thing.
Has it taken you by surprise a little bit, just what it means, not just to the racing fraternity, but people in general? I've been in taxis this week and people are talking about it. I went downstairs this morning, a lady gave me a coffee, she's talking about it, what it means to all women out there, and sort of when you're doing your post-race speech, and what you said was spot on, but you're surprised at the actual impact it's had on so many people?
I am actually. It's remarkable, and I just think it was meant to be. It's like all the stars aligned in the lead up, and my feeling was, I just had such a strong feeling that I was going to win. And my two sisters, Margaret and Bernadette, they said exactly the same before the race. They're like, I've just got a feeling you're going to win. And everything has just been like a fairy tale, and it seems like it's fate. It seems like, one, it was meant to happen for racing because of all the bad things that have been, you know, being said about it, and just to show everybody in the world that racing is a great industry. It's such a great sport, and I didn't want to, you know, harp on the fact about it being hard for women, but I wanted to point it out because I think it's time to change that people's mentality. And it's just, I just can't believe it. Like, it really feels as though it's meant to be. And the most amazing part of it, I feel, is how Stevie's handled it. We, all of our family, just shake our head in amazement about how amazing he is in his interviews, how he's just lapping it up. Like, when he walked back in and his arms were in the air, I was just laughing to myself. Like, look at him go. He's just in his element. And that's probably the best part about this whole thing.
Are you a religious person? I read that you went down on the Sunday at the racing mass of St. Francis Church and got your saddle blessed. Is that something that you've done before?
No, it isn't actually. We are a very religious family. My dad, I think that gave him hope when my mum passed away. When we were growing up, we had to go to church every Sunday, and he'd make us stop and turn the TV off and say Hail Marys and the Our Father, like, all the time whenever he thought he needed to. And to go down there, I was sitting next to the owners of Winx in the aisles, and they said to me, "Oh, go and get your saddle for Sunday and get Father Brennan to bless it. He's blessing our Cox Plate." And I was like, "Oh, great." So I ran back out to the car and got my saddle that I was going to be riding in. And when it was over, I went up to Father Brennan, who has been fantastic for our family as well, because he helped my dad when my dad went through a tough time recently with a triple bypass. And he blessed it for me. And having that faith and making you feel safe is, I think, is such a great thing to have. Like, when you're doubting yourself, or when you're worried about something, or you're scared, and you can and say a prayer and then feel safe, is, I think, it's pretty special.
Michelle, just as we let you go, you've been generous with your time. And as I said, it's been absolutely my favourite interview of the year that we've done on Dead Set Legends. A victory like this, it will continue to live on, Michelle. I was watching the news with my daughter, who's 5 and a half, on Tuesday night. She said, "Oh, Dad, I didn't know you could be a girl and ride horses." And that will continue to play out. And in 20 years' time, 10 years' time, there'll be another young jockey that comes through that's a female, and she'll do what you've done. And they'll interview her at Flemington, and they'll say, "Why did you get into this sport?" And they'll say, "Because I saw Michelle Payne win the Melbourne Cup in 2015. And that's the wonderful thing about what you've done, Michelle. You've opened up a lot of doors to a lot of little girls out there that haven't realised this is something they could do.
You're just giving me goosebumps everywhere. That's so special. And when I was speaking to the Loretto girls yesterday, I was just like, you know, just never give up on your dreams and always believe in yourself. And that's going to be the most special thing out of this. And I do believe that's why it happened, to give people hope. And I'm just so glad that God chose me to be the one to share that. And also, I have to say before I leave, I've got to thank Brownie, because I feel bad that I didn't mention him.
Come on.
It is funny. Like, 2 weeks ago, Coffin Cup Day, I was talking to him and I told him I was nervous going to ride La Passe, who won a Group 2 that race. And you know, he did. He said, "Don't worry about it. You'll be right." And so I have to mention him.
You didn't have to do that, but thanks,
you've made him smile. Hey, Michelle, congratulations on a week, and thanks for being so warm and open and generous with your time. I've absolutely been a thrill to chat with you. Good luck going forward, and again, well done on just a wonderful, brilliant story all round. I think you made all of Australia smile, which is a really special thing.
See you tonight,
Michelle. Thank you very much. Yeah, see you later. Bye.
And we'll steer clear of the dog. That was Michelle Payne, Melbourne Cup winning jockey, on the Dead Set Legends with Mark Howard and Campbell Brown on Triple M. We have to go to a 7-star hotel room on the other side of the world in New York,
New York City.
To speak to the former Australian cricket captain, who is about to line up with Warnie, Tendulkar and the like for the cricket all-stars. I'm not sure he knows what he's getting himself into. Ricky Ponting is on the line. G'day, Rick.
No, you got the wrong room, mate. You didn't get Warnie's room. I'm not in the 7-star one.
No, we can hear the thumping next door from Warnie's room, though, Rick. How are you? Tell us, how did all this come apart, mate? And how long have you been in New York? And what's it going to be like?
Been in New York for a few days, so just starting to get over the jet lag and the long flight to get here. How did it come about? I think it came about from a game that Warney and Tendulkar played a game at Lords last year, and they sat down after that and thought, you know, there might be an opportunity to take cricket to a few places around the world that hasn't seen a lot of the game. So they've managed to get 30 of the probably the better players that have ever played the game that are now internationally retired, got them all together in the one place at the one time, and here we are just about to walk out onto Citi Field in New York to play a game of cricket. It's pretty remarkable.
Did you find Alan Donald's passport? I saw that he randomly lost that somewhere along the track and Warney was tweeting trying to find it.
We got a few messages back. One guy in New Delhi told us that he had it because there was an offer of tickets to the game up for grabs. So we got a few responses from all different parts of the world. But no, Alan's done a good job there. I mean, it sums up fast bowlers, doesn't it? He's actually lost his passport from the time he got through customs to the time he got to the hotel. So, yeah, well done, big fella.
Tell us some of the names that are there with you, Rick, because as you said, it's some of the greatest players to ever play the game. It's a remarkable roll call.
Yeah, well, we had the media sort of call yesterday to select the two teams, and it was actually done Ridgey Didge as well, but as it turned out, there's Warney's side will be Hayden and Vaughan, I think, opening the batting. Ponting 3, Callis, Simons, all those sort of names, and then Daniel Vittori on the bowling side of things, wasn't Matt Graham in our side.
Wow.
Courtney Walsh, Kirtley Ambrose, there are a few names there, and then you look at the other side, Tendulkar's side will be probably something like Sehwag, Laxman, Tendulkar, Lara, Jay Wardner, Murali, Akhtar, Sean Pollock. And, you know, the names just keep going. There's, you know, the McGrath's obviously on that side as well. So, yeah, they've done an amazing job. I know what it's like to try and organise cricketers and get them into one place at one time. It's not an easy thing to do, but to have us, you know, 30 of us all here in New York at once has obviously taken a lot of organising.
You're sliding in at number 3. We had the big bash shoot a couple of weeks ago, and I said, now, if you need any work in the nets, give me a call. You didn't give me a call, which let me down a little bit. How have your preparations been, Rick? Have you had a hit? Are you ready to go? Because you're batting at number 3 at Citi Field in New York.
Yeah, well, my confidence was low enough as it was, Howard. I didn't need you coming and knocking me over. even lower.
I think I would have boosted your confidence, to be honest, great man.
Yeah, no, maybe. I had about 4 hits in the 2 weeks leading up. I went into the MCG with one of my ex-state coaches, Greg Shippard, and did a bit of work in there. I got to face some of the Australian under-19 bowlers and stuff inside at the G, and then had a hit on Citi Field this afternoon. Actually, we had the centre wickets gone down, and we had a training session and a clinic for about 150 kids on the ground today. So, mate, all going okay. I wouldn't say that I'm in career best form, but there's some quite short little boundaries here, as you can imagine, at this baseball stadium. Mm. So little blokes like me will be targeting those short boundaries.
What's the expected attendance? Because Americans, they don't really have a cricket side and they're not notoriously cricket lovers, but we're hearing that there's going to be plenty of people there.
Let's hope so, mate. I think the capacity is in the high 40s, I think, 40-odd thousand here at Citi Field. So, look, we understand that there'll be a lot of expat Indians, Sri Lankans and Bangladeshis will come out and watch us play. There's no doubt about that. I mean, they're circling the hotel as it is, waiting for Sachin to walk out the front door. But, look, hopefully we get a good share of Americans to come along and watch the game. You know, we've been sort of talking it up for the last week or so over here. The boys have been here early promoting it and stuff. And, you know, I think the best thing to do when you're trying to explain cricket to the Americans is say that it's actually quite similar to baseball. You know, tell them there's a pitcher, tell them there's a batter, tell them there's a catcher, and we're trying to hit the ball as far as we can and score as many runs as we can. And if you give the Americans something like that, then, you know, hopefully they'll come out and watch us.
Not as much chewing of tobacco, though.
Well, a lot of these blokes are retired, mate. You never know what
Now, Rick, we just saw on the news, I think it was Shane and Sachin opening the ringing of the bell at the New York Stock Exchange, the first time cricketers have done that. Just sort of take us into the last 48 hours in the world of Warney, as much as you can when people are driving to netball and cricket and stuff with their children this morning, Rick.
Well, he's been here for about a week, I think, Howie. He's been doing everything he can to get out and promote these exhibition games as they are, along with Sachin. I think he took Matty Hayden and Wasim Akram with him this morning, I think, for the ringing of the bell. It was too early, way too early for me to get up and go down and do that this morning. But and actually, the big fella Warney's been in a world of pain the last 24 hours. He's picked up some sort of food poisoning bug, and he's missed all our activities except that one this morning. He didn't train this afternoon, and So we haven't seen him for a while, but hopefully, well, he's my skipper, so hopefully he's all right for the game tomorrow.
Do you think this is the way forward? I know that it's the first of hopefully many for the boys. Do you think we're going to see we see the seniors tour in the golf, which you've seen a lot of, Rick. Do you think we're going to see a seniors tour in T20 cricket?
Mate, at the end of the day, I don't think it's necessarily about us. I don't think it's about the players. I think it's about the game and growing the game in different regions around the world. You know, this is obviously a massive market for all sport here in America. There's some talk about some games in Singapore and Malaysia and maybe even China coming up. That's another. China's obviously another massive market that cricket's sort of looking.
You fit in well there, Ricky, with your sort of partly Asian looks.
Yeah, I'll be out of place there, mate. I get the little squinty eyes going, and I'll be fine, I reckon. Mate, who knows? We've signed up. The players are signed up for 3 years, and I think it's 15 games in that 3 year period. So look, we'll just do our best to promote the game as well as we can here, and then see where it takes us next year.
It's on tomorrow morning at 5 a.m. You can see it live on Gem, which is obviously the Channel 9 digital channel. So live on Gem tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Rick, as we let you go, they've been doing everything they can to replace you at number 3 for Australia, and obviously being the superstar you were, it hasn't been easy. A man that you've been involved in and were a champion of, Usman Khawaja, was fantastic. You probably didn't see much of it, but 170 in the first innings against New Zealand. He's made the next step, hopefully, for Australian cricket, Rick.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. It's fantastic to see that. I mean, I have been a bit of a supporter of Usman for the last couple of years. He's, been in and out of the side and had a bad run with injury last year. But, I'm just rapt to see that Australian team go out and play the way they have for the first couple of days of the game. You know, they 500 and whatever they got on the board, and now, New Zealand 5 for 150. It'll, if there was any negativity around about our team, and I know everyone was sort of pumping up the Kiwis, but like I've always said, mate, the Kiwis, when it comes to cricket, they don't generally ever stand up against Australia, and I think we've seen that again this week.
And Rick, you're off to a black tie function very shortly. I think I can hear the butler knocking on the door of your hotel suite now. So
he's actually polishing my shoes.
Hey, we appreciate your time. We'll see you on Network 10 from, I think, the 17th of December on the Big Bash too, which will be fun.
Go on, your punter.
Can't wait, boys. See you later.
Riggy Ponting in New York. You can see that game tomorrow morning, 5 a.m. live on Gem. That'll be worth a look, Brownie. Some of those names that Ricky rolled out.
Unbelievable, wasn't it?
Dog, it is always fun to have you in the studio. You're going to love this next guest. This is a 13-year-old man by the name of Dane Barry. He is the nephew of the Melbourne Cup winning trainer, Darren Weir. This is him. He's a young race caller. He's only 13, calling at Mount Witchyproof last Saturday. Have a listen.
Past the 400, Calcadance on the outside, then followed by Under the Whip, then Grand Targe, and then followed Magical Ruby. Schwa City's gone as they near by the home corner. It's Calcadance on the outside, went up to join Viva La Dance, who wants to fight. Grand Targe gets to the outside. It's Calcadance with Viva La Dance and Grand Targe down the outside. Calcadance from Viva La Dance, Grand Targe on the outside, and boom! I reckon Fierce Calcadance in the middle has just won this from Viva La Dance and Grand Targe. Magical Ruby and Schwa City was lost in.
Magnificent.
We've got Michelle Payne on later. We've got Riggy Ponting on. But I'm more excited about speaking to this young man. His name is Dane Barry. He's on the line now. G'day, Dane.
Hello.
Hey, congratulations on the call, mate. Absolutely fantastic. Tell us, how did you get into race calling? And how old were you when you first started, Dane?
I got into race calling because of my uncle, who's a trainer, and watching his horses and listening to other race horses calling my uncle's horses over the line. And I just thought, well, that's what I want to do. And I started when I was 12 at Mount Witchyproof, which is last year I called at Mount Witchyproof as well.
Well, it's harder than it looks to do race calling. Is there someone that you model your style on? Is it a Greg Miles, a Jared Waitley, a Bruce McAvaney? Who is the person you look up to?
I look up to Rick. He's helped me a lot. He's always there when I call, when I borrow his binoculars and things. He's just helps, tells me strategies to use through the run, and he's been a terrific help to me.
How much research do you have to do, Dane? Because it's not just a matter of rolling up, as the dog knows is one of the great special comments men in AFL football. It's not a matter of just turning up and getting it done. How much work do you have to do during the week, and does it get in the way of your schoolwork?
Because I only do one race. I don't really do much through the week. No, I don't. But before the race it's usually the best where you have to really concentrate and focus on the colours and the names of the horses. Yeah.
Do you get a little bit nervous just as they're loading them in the barriers and you know that everyone's listening into the race?
I do get a bit nervous. Yeah, I try to don't look below and just call how it is.
And how do you feel listening back? We might just have a listen to the last sort of 7 or 8 seconds of that race once again, then I'll ask you that question.
I reckon Fierce Calcadance down in the middle has is lost in.
Now, you know what I love about that, Dane, is I've been accused, and this is my job, and I actually get paid for it, of having a pretty high-pitched voice on the wireless, and you've got that covered. What do you think when you listen back to it?
Well, I kind of think the same thing.
But it's good, mate. You brought passion to it and excitement, which is what people want to hear, Dane.
Did you get it looked like a close photo finish. Did you get the call right?
Yeah, I did get the one.
That's very important in those close finishes.
The accurate one.
Because the punters, they're holding their tickets, hoping that you got it right.
That's it. Now, Dane, you talked about your nephew, Darren Weir, and that's why he got involved in the sport. Where were you, what were you doing, and what did you think when his horse won the Melbourne Cup?
Yeah, well, my uncle, well, I kind of just followed him for a long time, really, just watching his horses every day. But I was at the Melbourne Cup, and it was an amazing feeling. I nearly had to pinch myself. It was unbelievable.
Did you get someone to have a dollar or two each way on the horse for you?
No, I didn't. I'm just happy that Darren just won the race, I suppose.
Have you caught up with Darren yet and got your hands on the Melbourne Cup?
Yeah, I have seen Uncle Darren. Yes, I've seen him after the race, and after there was a bit of a party back at his house. I've seen him then, and I have had a hold of the cup. It's pretty awesome.
You're going to have to get it and bring it into school for a show and tell.
I don't know about that.
Now, as we let you go, Dane, you've done a wonderful call here. Is this your future? Can you picture yourself? Do you lie in bed at night? Michelle said she's laid in bed trying to think about winning the Melbourne Cup. Have you sort of lain there and think at some stage you might get to call the Melbourne Cup?
Well, at the moment, this is what I want to do, but whether that changes or not, but no, I really can't picture myself calling a Marvel Cup. I could picture myself calling a Bumbeak or Witchy Proof Cup, and that's it.
Hey, Dane, listen, we really appreciate your time. I believe you're off to the races today. Have a wonderful, wonderful time. Thanks for having a chat with us, mate. We absolutely love what you're doing.
That's fine. Thank you for having me.
Dog, your favourite sporting moment you've ever seen live when you've been there?
That's a good question. I saw Cathy Freeman.
Or 2000.
2000, the same night Haile Gebrselassie came from
Ethiopian.
The clouds to win the 10Ks. But I think earlier this year I went over to the Super Bowl, which I've already touched on Dead Set Legends before, and saw the Patriots win that in the last play of the day. That's probably the best sporting moment. What about yourself? You've seen it all, Howie, really.
I have, and often working. I didn't work in 2006. Went and saw this up in Sydney at the Olympic Stadium. Best sporting moment I've ever seen live.
Here's Aloisi for a place in the World Cup.
For us.
He scores! Australia have got it!
Come on!
Still makes me smile. Aloisi put us into the World Cup.
Great commentary.
People we didn't know next to us absolutely hugging with joy. No one wanted to leave the stadium. They had to say, come on, if you want to get a train, you've got to go now, because people were just still singing the national anthem. A book has been written about that night. And it's, well, rather eloquently titled That Night by Adam Peacock. I hope the book's better than the title, Adam. How are you, great man?
Howie, Brandog. Yeah, good, thanks.
Just ran out of ideas by the time you got to the title, great man.
Basically, well, you can look in the chapter listing if you get the book. I basically get to chapter 13, 14, and all these early chapters have got these fancy names. And by the end of it, it's like the second last chapter is called Penalties, and the one after it's called Aftermath. And then I titled the book and I went That Night. So, yeah, basically, you're right. I ran out of ideas.
Mate, no, seriously, in all seriousness now, congratulations. You do an absolutely wonderful job on Fox, and you dominate the football there. But it actually surprises me no one had the idea to write a story, because, as I said, it was such a magical moment. You were there. Tell us about the book and who you spoke to and how it all came together, mate. Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks, mate. Yeah, I looked at it and it took me a good 2 to 3 weeks to comprehend that no one had actually written the definitive story of that particular sporting event, because you, the ones you mentioned there, and I'm sure there's books in the go about New England's bloody Super Bowl win last season and the other events that you mentioned there, but I couldn't believe that no one had done the definitive story. So what I did, I talked to over 30 people involved in the campaign for the matches against Uruguay, went over to Holland, talked to Gus Hiddink, caught up with the great Dukes, Harry Kuehl, and some of the other guys as well, like John Aloisi's on the cover. Obviously, I got an interview from Mark Schwarzer that I used a while ago because he was busy with his Premier League commitments. But, spoke to over 30 people involved and told not only the story leading up to and including the actual match, but their backstories as well, because they're fascinating stories. These guys went out of their comfort zones, like Mark Bresciano and Vinny Grella and guys like that, out of their comfort zones, and then it all kind of turned full circle, and they made themselves superstars here in Australia by what they did on that particular evening in Sydney.
Adam, how long did it take you to write this book?
3 months, from February to May last year. And it was like being back in high school, Brandog. the deadline was approaching. Unfortunately, the teacher gave me a week extension by the end of it as well. So the last 3 nights were not a lot of sleep, a lot of Red Bull, a lot of music on YouTube, just continuing the mixes to get through it, and eventually got there in the end. But it's so satisfying, especially when you get the thing in your hand.
We're speaking to Adam Peacock. He's brought out a book called That Night. Not his first book, but I think this will be the main one. He wrote a wonderful book about his time in Brazil over there with Fox at the last World Cup. That Night, you can get it in all good bookstores now.
That should be called That Junket, that first.
Nothing better than a good junket.
Well, I think we spoke to him a couple of times in Brazil, not sober, and we spoke to him a couple of times. So I think this one's a slightly more compact effort. What are your memories of the night, Ad? Because that's as much as I remember the soccer, I can actually remember the loudspeaker telling people the last train is ready to leave. You must leave the stadium if you want to catch the train. And there was still no one had left 45 minutes after the game. That's the thing that sticks in my mind.
Yeah, and speaking of Gus Hiddink, that, like, because his memory, obviously, he's been through a fair bit, the legendary Dutch coach, and 10 years on after the event, when I interviewed him, I said, what's the thing that stands out for you? And he can't really figure out any tactics, or bringing Harry Kewell off the bench, or John Aloisi's penalty, or Schwartz's save. It was actually Land Down Under on loop at the end of the match, and the whole crowd going absolutely nutso. And he and his wife actually still talk about that night as well. They've got a photo up in their living room of all the guys taking off from the centre circle. It's on the back cover. And he still speaks fondly of the Australians and their mentality and being so coachable and open to ideas and don't mind having the piss taken out of them. But he remembers that little, it seemed like it went on forever, but it was actually, having a look back at the tape, it was only about 10, 15 minutes of that Land Down Under from Men at Work on the loop, and the whole place just going nutso. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was quite incredible.
The picture on the front cover is John Aloisi at the spot about to take the kick. Did he put a bit of pressure on you to try and use the photo after it went through with his shirt off when he was running around with just ripped to shreds?
No, he paid me a nice little advance on the advance by getting me not to do that. That's actually up in the offices at Fox Sports there, him looping around. And he actually... there's a story behind that. He, 4 years before, he was that disappointed not getting off the bench in the failed campaign against Uruguay that he said, he rang his mum and dad, and he rang his wife in Spain that night and said, I am going to score the goal that takes us to the next World Cup. Now, obviously, he's basically guessed there, but it came true 4 years later. And the reason he did that huge run is because the night before, he actually asked the team manager, where are the family sitting? Because I want to know where they're sitting, because I want to run straight to them after I score the goal. And that's why I did the 100-yard sprint up the back straight there and waved to the crowd, because that's where all the families were.
What about the research from our man Adam Peacock that night? Adam, before we let you go and race straight to the bookstore, which is what I'm going to do now to buy this little sucker, as we said, you're just killing it on Fox Sports. I'm enjoying the Premier League. Chelsea not going well. The dog won't have heard this. I just want to get your thoughts on, you've interviewed a lot of people. I don't know if you've had the chance to interview Jose Mourinho, but this dog, just listen to my man Jose after Chelsea had another loss last weekend.
Jose, a 3-1 defeat after a fabulous start. The game just got away from you there.
I have nothing to say.
Nothing to say about the game at all?
Nothing. I have nothing to say.
Nothing to say about the Lucas decision that left him on the pitch?
Nothing to say. I have nothing to say.
The Costa clash?
I have nothing to say. I'm so sorry, I have nothing to say.
Do you not think it's time to have a chat to the fans just to give them some message, give them indication of your thinking?
The fans are not stupid.
We heard them chanting your name.
The fans are not stupid.
You did say before this game that you weren't worried. Are you a little bit more worried now?
No.
What do you reckon of that, Cocko? That's one of the great post-matches.
He makes himself the story every single time, no matter what happens. So if you're his publicist, you're the happiest person in the world. I'm not sure if you're that happy if you're his club boss. He's gone a little far this season. He's become this vitriolic type character, and he's become the more of a villain than he has. But man, he's great for a journalist. Man, he's great for a TV producer. That is gold. That's rolled gold, all of that. So that's hopefully it. The pressure continues and he keeps on coming up with stuff like that.
Hey, best of luck with the book, A Decade on the Story of Australian Football's Greatest Night. Adam, we appreciate your time. Good luck with it all, mate. I'm sure it'll sell like hotcakes.
Cheers, Adam.
Boys. Thanks.
It is now time for Brownie, who came in this morning and said, mate, I need 4 minutes because I've got the most extraordinary story ever heard on radio to bring to the good people, the listeners of the Dead Set Legends.
Well, many listeners out there have pets, pet dogs.
Yes.
And you sometimes get a little bit frustrated if you come home and they've ripped up the paper or they've chewed on your best pair of shoes or something like that. But I woke up a little bit hungover on a Sunday after Derby Day and my wife was on the phone to her father, so my father-in-law.
What's his name?
Tom Johnson, Tommy. Who's listening in hospital.
Hello, Tommy. He's in hospital.
He is.
I don't like where this story's going.
Tom is a diabetic and he can no longer feel his feet. So he can't drive because he sometimes puts his foot on the accelerator when it should be on the brake and things like that. So he's gone to bed on Saturday night. It was a little bit of a humid night. So he's decided to sleep with his feet outside of the bed covers.
Oh, no.
And they're lovely little pet chihuahua cross called Sable.
Yeah.
Was sleeping on the end of the bed. Now, Tom's got up at about 4 o'clock in the morning to go to the bathroom.
Can't feel his feet.
He's turned on the light and there's all this blood on the end of his bed and he's looked down and he thought, what's happened here? And the little pet chihuahua, Sable, has chewed off the end of his toe, his big toe. Now, I want you to have a look at your screen right now.
So I'm looking at triplem.com.
We've just put it up and it's chewed off. So obviously, because he can't feel it, he hasn't been able to kick the dog away. So it's continued to nibble all night. It's online. He's been rushed to hospital where he is right now still. Continue to scroll down because this is his big toe now. He's had to have it amputated.
How many stitches?
He's had to have it amputated. So his pet dog, They don't know what to do with it. You know, what do you do to a dog that's just chewed off your big toe? Do you put it down? Well, I've been told with some authority that Tom will be gone before the dog's gone. So that's Deb, his wife, says that the dog stays. You just need to deal with the fact that this dog has now got most of your big toe in its stomach.
So, Tom, diabetic, can't feel his feet, asleep at night, foot outside the doona cover. How long? What type of dog is this? A Rottweiler?
No, tiny, most cutest little chihuahua cross you've ever seen in your life.
It just started nibbling.
Nibbling.
And he's gone down to
the... Well, because obviously he couldn't feel it. He couldn't kick it away. So
what's wrong with the dog?
A few licks turned into a couple of little bites, which turned into
so chumpy you could carve it.
Yeah. Yep. Ate the bone. So
he's gone. I'm sorry, listeners, but there's bone sticking out of the side.
Well, it's extraordinary, and I told you it was an extraordinary story. I didn't say it was funny. It's clearly not funny. Mind you, my wife found it quite humorous. Tom, if you're listening.
His toe's been removed. Okay, you're an animal lover. What would you do to the dog?
I'd find great difficulty looking that dog in the eye again and patting it.
You couldn't pat it. It can't be around children.
They can be around children because they'll be able to feel when it's biting them and push it away.
Check out triplem.com.
Tom, we're thinking of you, mate, and hope you get better out there. It's unfortunate. At least you've got your other 9 toes.
Oh, check out triplem.com.au. Already 100 people have had a look at it in the last 90 seconds. Mark, what's his name?
He's gone viral. Tom's gone viral.
Tom, it looks like his toe's gone viral. Dead Set Legends, triplem. Brownie, basketball in this country is back.
Back.
It had a period where it was just sort of ticking over. Now Melbourne United, they're 8-0. The competition is flying. It's on Fox Sports. It's all over the place. And a couple of stars from Melbourne United are in the studio now. Daniel Kickett and Iggy Hajimirovic. And Iggy, I'm just happy that I've got your name out. How are you?
Good, mate. How are you?
Yeah, fantastic. Dan, you've been around this sport for a long time. You started off here probably in the heyday of Australian basketball. You went overseas. You've come back. It's absolutely flying once again. So congratulations to you, Iggy, and the boys, firstly, at Melbourne, because it's been a wonderful start to the season.
It's been an awesome start, and it's I've timed it really well. Come back. The resurgence has begun, and it's good to be playing at a time that's very similar to the heyday back in the 90s and that, so it's great to be a part of.
What's been the turnaround? As I said, it had a quiet period, let's be honest, basketball. You've got a new owner now, you're on Fox Sports 5 nights a week, I think you're on Channel 9 as well. There's been something, a sort of a groundswell, I don't know what it is, but all of a sudden, every time I turn on the news, the basketball's on.
Yeah, well, I put all the credit to a man named Larry Kesselman, who's our owner, and he's taken charge, and he's a true businessman, and he's competitive and loves to succeed, and he's gone out and hit the grassroots, and it's it's paid dividends. So we've got a lot of kids coming out, a lot of families coming out now, and getting the people showing up, getting the fans, getting the viewership, and it's you know, come up trumps.
Now tell us a bit about you, Iggy. You've been playing college basketball in the States. Tell us about that. And now you're back in Melbourne, which is fantastic.
Yeah, played a bit of college basketball for Boise State. Was over there for about 4 years. It was a great experience. You know, college is a great thing for younger guys to go over there to develop their game.
And what then, about the frat parties?
Yeah, I don't know anything about those.
Straight to the issues. What is it like, though? Because we see it, and obviously Patty Mills and Matty Dellavedova, they've all gone through a similar program you have. What's it actually like day-to-day playing college sport?
Oh, it's a bit of a grind, you know. You got your athletics, and then you got your school and stuff. But it's a lot of fun, you know. You get to travel around the country, playing in big arenas in front of crazy crowds. So
what type of crowds?
Probably about 13,000, 15,000, like on the good games. And it's just awesome to play in that environment. So then coming back here and seeing the resurgence of the NBL, you know, it was a great sign, you know, for me just to stay in Australia and continue to develop my game, and especially in my hometown. So I was excited about that.
Danny, any chance you're going to score any two-pointers? Because from what I see, you just sort of stand outside the three-point line and just drop them in from the car park at times.
Oh, you just got to take what's given to you. And, I've got a bunch of blokes around me who are dangerous weapons, so I just make the most of my opportunities and, just knock them down when I can.
Talking about dangerous weapons, the dog came in here this morning. He said, there's one thing and one thing only I want to ask these boys about. You've got the frat parties out. Now, there's another side of your
There was quite an unsavoury incident last week, and I saw some Twitter photos of a badly broken jaw from the Perth Wildcats captain Damien Martin. What were your thoughts on that incident? And the bloke ended up getting cleared as well to play.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I wouldn't want to be on that tribunal, but it's unfortunate for Damo. He's a great guy. He's a hard-nosed player, and everyone respects him. Unfortunately, wrong place, wrong time. Copped a massive elbow by a big man, and unfortunately split his jaw in half at the front there, and out for 2 to 3 months.
Were you surprised that there was no suspension?
A little bit. It could have gone either way.
Yeah.
Bit surprised, but I understand how he could get off. He was caught tangled up a little bit. Contact was a little excessive, but you know, only he really knows what the motive was and what he intended. And all talk around the league is that he didn't intend to do it, and he's not that type of guy. But it's a tough situation.
Howie, I'm all for giving guys the benefit of the doubt.
There's
a lot of accidents happen out
there. How did you see it? You're a great analyst of this type of situation.
Well disguised.
Perfectly
executed.
Was it? Now, if people want to get along, Iggy, where are you playing? When's the next home game? How can people come and see this phenomenon that is 8-0 at the moment at United?
We play tomorrow in the afternoon at 3 p.m. against New Zealand. We haven't played them yet, so this game is a big one for us. You know, they're also a very good team. They got a few players back. Corey Webster, he just was in the NBA trying out over there, and he's, I think, leading the league in scoring. So him and Goulding will be going at it, and it'll be a great game to come down and watch for the fans and all the kids, so should come down.
So no Flemington today for you guys? You just got to prepare?
Unfortunately, we've got training today, so we'll stay nice and dry, stay out of the rain.
What is the physical requirements, Dan? I notice you guys, you play a lot of basketball. How physically fit do you need to be, and how important is recovery? Because you always seem to be on the court.
Yeah, no, recovery is huge. We do a really good job of with our staff of getting recovered, and because there's so many back-to-back games and close games within 2-3 day period, that's got to be a priority. So a lot of the sessions, so yesterday was a travel and recovery day for us, and today will just be a light session, going over some of their stuff and preparing for tomorrow. So a lot of it is, making sure you're in shape before the season begins, so when the time comes around that you can afford to take a little bit of time off between games and just keep your body healthy.
You blokes have got some very sharp outfits. Did you notice what was happening over with LeBron? That the Cavs have got new tops, that they're too tight, and he ripped the sleeves off the other day. Did you boys see that?
I saw that.
Is that the type of gear the type of sort of power you have down at United, or not you blokes?
I'm with LeBron. I don't like anything over my shoulders. I'm not a fan of that, so I like the loose around the arms so I can let them fly.
I reckon they're going to change the uniform pretty soon when LeBron's ripping the sleeves off. Hey, boys, have a wonderful, wonderful year at Melbourne United. Thanks for coming and have a chat, Daniel and Iggy. May the season continue, and you're on track for a perfect season. If you do that, we'll get you near several times because that'll be amazing. Cheers, guys.
Sounds great.
Great to see the boys from Melbourne United. They're 8-0. Go down and have a look at the Mark Howard, Campbell Brown, Dead Set Legends, Triple M. Triple M's Dead Set Legends for Harvey Norman. Mark Howard, Wayne Carey, but Aerosmith with a dog singing in the background.
Yeah, not Mark Howard, Wayne Carey.
Oh, sorry, Mark Howard, Campbell Brown. You threw me with your singing of Steve Tyler type gear.
I've been compared to Wayne Carey, though, on the field before.
Have you? Have you now?
Well, I'm not sure.
Who did that comparison?
Me.
Greg Rust to talk all things motorsport. Hello, Thruster.
Oh, good morning, Mark. Good morning, Campbell. How are you both?
Good, Russ.
I love the show, boys. Love your show.
Yeah, thank you very much. First time caller, long time listener. I've got a lot of motorsport questions to ask you, but my man Dog is quite enthused, so he wants to go straight off the top, Russ.
I haven't watched too much MotoGP this year, but something caught my eye last week, and it was when Valentino Rossi just channeled his inner Jackie Chan and decided to kick Mark Marquez off his bike. He's been punished by the Court of Arbitrations. Do you think he can win the title now he's starting at the back?
Good question.
This is one for the big deep voice promo guys at Triple M, isn't it? Yeah, this will be unmissable action.
That's it.
So, I mean, this is going to be unreal, guys. I mean, if he can go from the back of the grid, Lorenzo's been quick in practice on Friday. He was quickest in the second practice session. That's the guy he's fighting, his own teammate, for this rider's title. If he can come from the back of the grid and do this, it will be mega. And the reception in Spain after the coming together with the young Spanish rider Marquez, it must be so difficult on Rossi. This is, I'm still in shock that he did it, guys, that he engaged in that kind of thing. If he, Marquez is not without blame. We said that on the show last week. But I'm surprised Rossi didn't just let it go and focus on the big prize, and that's the title.
Thrust, I've been on those motorbikes before, and after a little while, a few laps, you actually get a bit of cramp in the hammy, and you need to extend it out a little bit just so you don't fall off the bike. I thought that's all Valentino was doing.
That'd be a very good line of defence, wouldn't it? But I'm not sure with all his years of experience that it would have washed with motorcycle racing governing body. No.
Yeah, looking forward to that. I think the race starts at 11:30. You might be able to see it on Network 10 as well, Doc. So make sure you tune in for that. The V8 over in New Zealand, Thruster, Scotty McLaughlin, sort of fired up his career when he did well over there at Pukekohe, or as it's known in the racing fraternity, Poker Kiwi, over there in the past. He was pretty quick yesterday.
Yeah, he was, and he's continued. I've literally just come from the third practice session now, Howie, and he's gone fastest in that one as well. At the end of Friday, he was on top. But the great story, in addition to the fact that the locals are loving McLaughlin being there, was that Mark Winterbottom and Craig Lowndes, the two guys that are at the top of the table in the Drivers' Championship, this is one of three rounds to go in V8 Supercars. They were second and third, respectively. And Lowndes, can you believe this? For a guy who's won 100 races, the most of anyone in the history of V8 supercar racing, he has never won a race here at Pukekohe. So history's not on his side, but he's got a bit of form this weekend, and he's got momentum after winning Bathurst and having a great season of endurance.
Are you in New Zealand, bruh?
Yeah,
oh,
I'm here.
I didn't realise you were there. What's the reception been like with the, in all seriousness, we're going different sports now, but you can do it. What's the reception been like for the All Blacks?
It's been massive, mate. They've had a number of parades through different cities during the week, but they were here in Auckland earlier in the week. They did a street parade. Our V8 supercar drivers did one the following day, but it was absolutely huge, Howie, the reception for those guys, and they're hoping a few of them might be on the grid here before the racing this weekend has been mega, absolutely mega.
What was the crowd comparison to the All Black Street Parade and the V8 boys doing their street parade?
It was actually pretty good because we're here with this event outside of, you know, many other sporting codes, you know, end of their year or grand finals. A lot of people pretty excited about V8 Supercar racing.
Oh, we lost Rusty. We've lost him somewhere. The phones have cut out from New Zealand, Doug and Doc, and I think that's it for Rusty.
It's gone.
No, he's done well, though. He told us everything we need to know. Triple M's Dead Set Legends for Harvey Norman, Mark Howard and Campbell Brown. And it's been an extraordinary show. Thanks to Dan and Iggy from Melbourne United for coming in. Adam Peacock with his new book out there called That Night. It's an absolute beauty. We had Greg Russ talking motorsport. You told us a story about your father-in-law, Tom, who is diabetic, so he can't feel his foot. You can see the pictures on triplem.com.au after his dog basically chewed half of his foot off.
Well, three quarters of his big toe.
You can see that on triplem.com.au. What you did organise was an interview with Michelle Payne, which
Brownie... Spine tingling.
Well, I've spoke to a lot of people on the show this year. That's the best interview I've heard. She's so honest, she's so open, she's so warm. People have been requesting it. You'll be able to get that on the website and the podcast, which will come out in about an hour's time.
Breath of fresh air for racing,
absolutely. She had all sorts of things to say. We've got a bit of time to play a little bit of it. This is Michelle responding to the question about when did you realise, and did you realise while you're still on the horse that you're about to win the Melbourne Cup? Do you get a chance when you're on the horse? Yeah. Brownie talks about a grand final, and he had a couple of minutes where he realised he was going to win the grand final. Did you have a moment where you're still on the horse where you actually think, I'm about to win the Melbourne Cup, I'm home here?
Yep, there was a couple actually. First was at the 600 when I was on the back of a trip to Paris, and I was going past the 600 and I was still pulling. I was like, oh my God, I think I'm about to win the Melbourne Cup, and I just said to myself, keep your composure, don't panic, just wait. You're not going to win it if you lose it. So got to the top of the straight and got to the 300, and I've never yelled so loud in my life. And then when I went across the line, like, I knew the last 300 I was home. Like, I had that much horse under me, and he spread out that there's no chance another horse will get over the top of me the way he's let down.
What a feeling that must be. You obviously know Michelle very well. You had a chat to her in the lead up to the race. You also brought all sorts of stuff that hadn't been heard from Michelle this week, including one particular question you asked her about the Prime Minister, Doc.
And what about after the race? You got a call from the Prime Minister. Now, is it true that you weren't sure who you were talking to, whether it was Tony Abbott or Julia Gillard with a husky voice,
rate,
or Malcolm Turnbull? There's been that much change in leadership. That was must have been pretty exciting.
I admit it. I was thinking, it's not Tony Abbott.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. You've known her for quite a while, Michelle Payne. Gee, she's taken it in a stride, hasn't she?
Yeah, she has, but you've got to understand that 15 or 16 years of very hard work has gone into this. They get up early, they do their track work. It's free. You don't get paid to do track work. You just do it in the hope that you know the horse and the trainers and the owners will put you on it because of the affiliation. Then they go to the racetrack and they ride. Then they have to get home. They got to watch what they. There's a lot of hard work goes into it.
Dangerous.
She's had a bad fall where she broke 5 vertebrae and 5 ribs and nearly gave it away only 18 months ago. So, and just the story with her brother, the 100-1 shot against the best the world could throw at the Melbourne Cup. I reckon it's the story of the year.
Yeah, it is the sporting story of the year, no doubt, at this point. An absolutely fantastic story. We also had Ricky Ponting on the line from a New York hotel where he was preparing to play for the Shane Warne All-Stars at Citi Field in New York.
Yeah, it's going to be fantastic too. And a couple of the Hawks boys are over there, so I wonder if they'll just cross paths with SK. We've got Hodgie and the boys over there too. But that'll be fascinating. I'm going to get up early and watch that in the morning, 5 a.m.
Yeah, 5 a.m. tomorrow on Gem. Keep an eye for that one.
I might just be getting home.
Yeah, well, you might not be home at that point as well. Ricky had a chat to us about all things cricket, including what he thought about the performance of Usman Khawaja.
I mean, I have been a bit of a supporter of Usman for the last couple of years. He's, been in and out of the side and had a bad run with injury last year. But, I'm just rapt to see that Australian team go out and play the way they have for the first couple of days of the game. They 500 and whatever they got on the board, and now, New Zealand 5 for 150. It'll, if there was any negativity around about our team, and I know everyone was sort of pumping up the Kiwis, but like I've always said, mate, the Kiwis, when it comes to cricket, they don't generally ever stand up against Australia, and I think we've seen that again this week.
Fair whack. When it comes to cricket, the Kiwis never stand up to Australia.
Well, it's just honest, and we like our sports stars to be honest, and Dave's just called it how it is.
When are we back on the verdict, Doc?
Next Thursday night, yeah.
Still pushing on, are we?
Yeah, look, I thought my impact with the GST and fiscal policy was outstanding on Thursday night.
Which part of the fiscal policy do you think was the vote winner for you?
Yeah, not too sure, but I'm wrapping my head around GST and deficit and surplus.
All right, you get yourself to the race. Have a great day. It's been a breath
of
fresh air. Well done, Campbell Brown. We'll be back next week with Brian Taylor, I believe, from 9 a.m. on the Dead Set Legends on Triple M.
Triple M's Dead Set Legends podcast brought to you by Harvey Norman, the experts in soundbars, making it easier than ever before to find the right solution.